Welcome to the Joy of Cruising podcast with your host, award-winning author, Paul C. Thornton, a weekly conversation with the amazing cruisers featured in the Joy of Cruising trilogy, comprised of The Joy of Cruising, Cruising Interrupted, and new release, The Joy of Cruising Again. Each book is a compilation of features about cruisers and cruise and travel personalities from around the world. It's the next best thing to cruising, hearing about cruising from the unique and diverse perspectives of Paul's amazing guests.
Hello, passionate cruisers. This is Paul. And this week on the Joy of Cruising podcast, I am delighted to welcome Mike Jason, president, Star Vista Live, one of the world's largest producers of music-themed cruises. Star Vista Live offers a diverse collection of 8 themed cruises covering a cross-section of music genres, all generally aimed at 55-plus cruisers. Star Vista Live's flagship cruise is the Malt Shop Memories Cruise, which features the music of the 50s and 60s, and artists have included the likes of the Beach Boys, Frankie Valli, and Dion. Other themed cruises are the Soul Train Cruise, which has starred artists such as Earth, Wind & Fire, Smokey Robinson, and Kool & the Gang. The Country Music Cruise, which has featured Vince Gill, Kenny Rogers, and Alabama. 70s Rock and Romance Cruise, with the likes of Peter Frampton and America. The Ultimate Disco Cruise, which has featured Gloria Gaynor and KC and the Sunshine Band. The Flower Power Cruise, featuring Three Dog Night and Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Sandy Beaches Cruise, headlined and curated by Delbert McClinton. And their newest event, the Big Easy Cruise, featuring New Orleans jazz, funk, and R&B, and just premiered in November. Mike is one of the few passion cruisers I wrote about in 2 books of the Joy of Cruising trilogy. Mike and Star Vista Live was in my first cruising book, The Joy of Cruising, in Malt Shop Memories, in a section called Theme Cruising, 2 Passions in 1. In my new release, The Joy of Cruising Again, I decided to circle back to Mike to cover how Star Vista Live fared with the pandemic. The pandemic's effect on cruise lines was major, but the impact on operators of theme cruises is about as significant a crisis as they are likely to face. Every consequence of COVID-19 on the cruise lines is exacerbated for a company dependent on full ship charters, particularly a music-oriented theme cruise company. Not only are they dependent on what the cruise lines do, who are dependent on the Center for Disease Control, but they had 2 sets of stakeholders they had to maintain ongoing relations with during the cruise shutdown. Guests, who in theme cruising are very likely repeaters, and performers, also likely to have an ongoing relationship with Star Vista Live. Welcome, Mike, to the Joy of Cruising podcast.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Good to see you again. How you doing?
It's been great. We've had a great year, lots of fun, and a new grandfather, so that's exciting. And it's great to be sailing the last year or so, like the pandemic never happened, which we're all aware it did, but we're well beyond it. So it's good to be back.
Well, a new grandfather, I tell you, there for me, there's been nothing like being a granddad. Oh, I love it.
It is exciting.
Before I ask you anything or say anything else, let me congratulate you publicly on your promotion. Listeners, you know, when I interviewed Mike for the book or the books, you know, he was an executive vice president, and he is now the president of Star Vista Live. So congratulations, Mike.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that.
So tell our listeners about yourself, where you're from, where you live, your extensive professional background in the music industry, and anything else you would like to share.
Yeah, I'm glad to. So I live in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, which is probably 25 miles southwest of Philadelphia currently. And I've been in the music business since the very early 90s. And prior to that, I was in the hotel business. So themed music cruises, kind of a combination between entertainment and accommodations, you know. And so it's kind of interesting. I worked for Intercontinental Hotels for about 6 years then went into the music business and been there ever since. I've been at Time Life, and now Star Vista Live is a successor company to Time Life for the last 15 or 16 years. But I was in the music business with BMG, which later became Sony, and Sanctuary Records in a varying degree of positions. And so I come from the music side, but I do understand the hospitality side, which is really important, obviously, in this role. So that's my story.
What brands did Intercontinental have?
Intercontinental was its own brand. It was probably 100 hotels, very high end, all over the world. So the Mark Hopkins in San Francisco, the Barclay in New York. We had the Mayfair in London and a number of hotels in Paris. It was actually founded by Pan Am. In the heyday of Pan Am, they were flying executives to different parts of the globe, and they ended up putting a hotel at the end of each major route that they had. And so for years, it was owned by Pan Am, then was sold to a British company, I guess probably in the early 80s, I'm guessing.
Now, one thing that I wrote about in The Joy of Cruising Again, and that was fun to hear about, is your Grammy nomination. Share that story with our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So a friend of mine sent me a clipping that said that there was a lawsuit that had been settled. There were some Hank Williams songs that were kind of archived and lost and found and then litigated over, but these had music that had never been heard. It was on the radio, or actually radio transcriptions. It was the house band for a Mother's Best Flower company in the early 50s, and he would record a few songs before he went on the road so that they could play them back later on. So long story short, these were, if you weren't listening to the radio in 1951 at like 7:15 in the morning, you never heard these before. They were totally unreleased. Now, Hank Williams died at 29. So to have 150 songs that had never been heard probably increased his catalog by 50 or 60% overnight. And these had been lost and then found and almost thrown away. It's a long, convoluted story, but his daughter actually got the rights back. He has a son and a daughter, and she got the rights back. And we approached her and said, we'd love to work on this material. It's like finding a closet full of Beatles material, Elvis material that no one had ever heard before. So it was pretty spectacular. And it was interesting, too, because she died before he was born. I think within a week of she was born within a week of his death. And so she never really heard her father speak. And so in these radio transcriptions, he was kind of interacting with the host, and then he would, play a song, and then they'd go away and come back again. So she actually got a sense of him. He played some songs that were the first time he ever played them, were on this show. So it was pretty spectacular, interesting stuff. And over a couple of years, we got to know her name. Her name is Jet Williams, and they granted us, the exclusive license to the material. We worked together to create a definitive box set, which had every radio show. And it was kind of complicated because the masters were in different formats. They had been archived for decades. And so you really had to painstakingly transcribe them from acetates to tape and then decide how much noise and pops and hisses to take out. So you really had to be very, very careful with the stuff. There's only a couple of people in the country who could transcribe these things. So anyway, there were 17 discs, I believe. And what we actually did was we found a couple of gentlemen that were in his band during the time.
Oh, wow.
And brought them in, and we found his engineer. So we had, we set up a little interview down on the lower Broad Street in Nashville, and Jet got to interview them and find out about her father, be on the road with him, some interesting anecdotes. And they told some wonderful stories that we ended up putting a DVD together. And then that was the last disc in the box set. And the box set was actually formed like a old style radio. And if you turn the knob, you heard the call letters from the radio station that you would have heard in 1951. And I guess it was designed for farmers that would go and milk the cows and then come back and have breakfast and listen to the show. And he was the house band of all things. We also had a map of everywhere he traveled to in 1951, which is amazing. How, I mean, San Diego and Southwest and all over the all the dates he did, we kind of follow him around and kind of showed on the map where he was. And it was all, of course, by car. And so it was in weather, terrible weather. So it was a grueling trip. But she also heard her dad's stories about her dad when he was a young man. And, you know, he died at 29. So he was a young man his entire life, if you will. So it was really pretty special stuff. And we got the Grammy nomination. And we flew out to California and got a great picture of myself with Jet and her husband, Keith, who was an attorney and that I did the deal with. And didn't win, but it was best historical set. So I don't know anything was more historical than what we did. But, you know, you don't always win. And so it was an experience.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. I have that. I included that photo in the Jura Cruising again, and I'm sure when I promote this episode, folks will see that photo. So that's pretty unique, a Grammy nomination. Talk about the origin of Starve This to Life.
7 years ago, we did an offsite. Oh boy, it's probably 15, 16 years ago. And we took a look at the future of the music business, you know, because we were essentially selling CDs and DVDs on TV and at retail. And of course, we realized that.
Excuse me, Mike. And this is when you were Time Life.
Yeah, we were Time Life, which is we're a successor company too. So it's really the same entity, if you will, but it's evolved into Starve This to Life. Time Life was a brand that we licensed for use for selling CDs and DVDs, and we had exclusive rights to it. And we went to the offsite and we came up with a couple of ideas. We said, you know, people love the music. People are buying less discs, but they love the music that's on the disc. Why don't we do a live performances of some of this music and bring it to people? And we thought, well, that's going into the touring business, which we really don't do. There are big players in it. And then somebody came up with the idea of, like, let's put it on a ship. And literally, that's as much as we knew about putting music on a ship. And so we our first one was Malt Shop Memories, since it was a TV package. We used to do 150 song TV packages. And Malt Shop Memories is a big hit. So we said, you know, let's take this music, let's put it on a ship. And we did it a year or two, and it was, you know, fairly small footprint. And then the third year, it took off. And but it was the offsite that led us to the idea that we could share the music. It wasn't so much a problem of selling music. It was selling music on discs. That was going to be the challenge. And then people would actually call us and say, can I buy the infomercial? Because the infomercial was a 30-minute kind of a pitch for the music. So you'd play some old clips of the artist performing, and then the host would come and say, who could ever forget, you know, your first car, your first date. This was the song you were probably, you know, playing at the time. It was nostalgic. And a lot of times people would want to buy that because they would love the nostalgia of the time period and the seeing the artist. So we thought, well, we can deliver that nostalgia to people on a ship and in an intimate environment. And so we came up with that. And we also came up with the idea of producing some music ourselves. Which kind of led to the Hank Williams thing and many other artists that we work with over the years. We produced it, and then we had digital rights, which was important. So those two things are really now what the company became. And we don't sell CDs and DVDs on TV anymore. That's gone away. But the you know, our DNA is still there, sharing nostalgic music and, you know, with fans.
So you mentioned Malt Shop Memories. Give us an overview. I mentioned the various theme cruises, Starve This to Life theme cruises in the introduction, but give us an overview of what Malt Shop Memories was comprised of, and do the rest for your other theme cruise. I mean, do that for the rest of your theme cruises as well.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be glad to. So the idea with Malt Shop Memories is to take that time period from the late 50s and early 60s. It's really the birth of rock and roll. The you know, the music was changing from music that only your parents would listen to music that was designed for kids, young people. And it was kind of a special time because you had those malt shops, you'd have the soda shop, you'd have the poodle skirts, you had the leather jackets. So you had not only music, you had some culture that was changing, the country was changing, but it was still a time of innocence to some large degree. And we thought it would really be great to take these people back. And, you know, I was saying that they can't live in the past, but it sure is nice to visit. And that's essentially what we did. Frankie Avalon and Bobby Rydell and Chubby Checker were so Dion were such a part of people's lives. The music was played everywhere. And, you know, those music fans are still out there. They were kind of ignored by the music industry and that, oh, it's old music. And at the end of the day, it's nostalgic music that that age really well. We knew there was a community of people. And so when we first got them on board, we said, my goodness, this is a community of people that really, you know, kind of get it no matter where, what part of the country they're from. They listen to the same music on their transistor radios at night. They went to sock hops. They went to prom. They live, you know, pretty specific lives. And we found that no matter where they lived in the country, they had an affinity in a community. Mm-hmm. And so that was our first, and we had a wonderful DJ who just passed us last year, Jerry Blabbitt, the geeter with the heater from Philadelphia. And he was kind of our Pied Piper initially. He had been doing these oldies shows, quote unquote oldies shows, throughout this kind of region in the summer at the beach and in Philadelphia. And we just had, he was our host, and he played the music, and obviously he never stopped playing the music. I mean, his taste changed. He just continued playing the music. So he really lived and breathed, knew every single artist, went way back with them, a lot of times helped break their records and make careers for them. So he was a really big part and a terrible loss for us, and a good person, a really good friend.
I recall the Geeta with the Heater well, because I spent most of my adult life in Wilmington, Delaware, which is right outside Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
Where he's like a god in Philadelphia.
He's a god in Philadelphia. He really is. Absolutely. He's not that well known in the rest of the country, but, you know, in this area, tri-state area, fantastic. And a music encyclopedia, he remembered more than the artists remembered about their careers. His interviews would be like, well, no, this is what really happened. So he would be correcting the artist sometimes, but a lovely guy. And then what happened is we said, boy, this is really, you know, something special. And we knew there were other demographics that needed the same kind of respect and embracing. And so we started, the second one was Soul Train. We licensed the name at the time. And we had Don's son. Don was very, towards the end, and he was not well, and we wanted him to come on board, but he just really couldn't. He wasn't doing well. But his son came on board. His son was the producer of many of the Soul Train shows. Mm-hmm. So Soul Train was our second cruise that we did, and it was just an immediate hit. It just was incredible. When we had a partnership with Black Entertainment Television, and they were playing TV commercials for us. They were helping us promote it. They came on board, and so they were a wonderful partner in the early days. And we found that it's just an underserved market of adults that just love the R&B music, and they really, really, you know, want that R&B music, and, you know, can't always get it, you know. So it's an interesting thing. So
Don Cornelius never did make an appearance.
He never did make an appearance, unfortunately. His son, Tony, came on board and is still on board with us these many years later. And we've had different co-hosts, but, you know, Tony has been the mainstay what we do. And we have the Soul Train Club. We're in the Crow's Nest, which is at the top of the ship. And I do the dance. They do DJs and after midnight. And that's a very, very active group. They really are probably stay up the latest of maybe one other crew stays up that late. They really are, and they're energetic, and they embrace every aspect of it. When we usually do theme nights, and so if there's formal night, I mean, everybody dresses. They really participate. Malt Shop as well, they're very participatory. Some of our crews are more or less participatory. than others, but Soul Train right from the beginning. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful time. The music is incredible. And we've had, you know, kind of anybody and everybody on it. So it's great. Still going strong. And it's beauty of R&B music is that it can get younger. As you lose artists, unfortunately, after, you know, 14, 15 years, some artists pass, you can always go to the next generation as long as you're true to the real R&B sound.
Right.
So that was our second one. And then we thought, well, let's not leave country out. And so we did country music for our third one. We had Kenny Rogers and Vince Gill and many, many other artists. And we did a partnership with the Grand Ole Opry. And so. All the right kind of participants on it. And that was a hit right from the beginning, too. It's a big, big genre like R&B music is. It's a very distinct that, you know, you can market to the demographic pretty easily, pretty directly, and a lot of fun and very different. Fourth one was Flower Power. We said, let's do something for the hippies of the late 60s. The 60s were, you know, kind of funny. You had the malt shop era, and then you had the pop side of the 60s, which we kind of focus on. And then, of course, you had the acid rock thing, which we never did, but the pop side of it, the Association and Herman's Hermits and you know, the Flower Power genre of music. So that was our fourth one, and that was a, you know, hit right out of the box. Then we went into 70s, and we did 70s rock and romance. And it took us a minute to find our footing. It's interesting that the 70s community took a minute to kind of come together. They really were focused on the music. Some or other genres, they were focused on both the music and the cultural experience, the kind of feel of the community. And the 70s seemed to be just show me the music and then I'll build a community based on hearing the music. But, you know, we've had some great artists, Foreigner.
So a little, it sounds like 70s was a little slow to take off, but it has found its footing.
It found its footing. It's just as successful as the other cruises. It just took us the first year. And also the first year is tricky too, because you're kind of guessing what the community will be. You're kind of guessing what music they'll react to more than other music. And so I think our second year we had Boz Scaggs and Michael McDonald and,
yeah. Oh, wow. So I would have loved that show.
It was great. You know, it just immediately took off, you know. But that first year, you're trying to guess. And then you don't meet these people with guests until you get on board. And then you say, oh, wow, now I see. And that happened a couple of times where we readjusted our approach. So 70s was the next one. And then we did the Ultimate Disco, which is a homage to, you know, everything disco. And we've had Kool and the Gang and Casey and the Sunshine Band and, you know, all the different great artists. And that's kind of fun because at night we turn the main dining room, which is two stories, into a disco, we call it Studio 55. So we don't step on the copyright that I'm sure Studio 54 has. But we have the floor, the Saturday Night Fever floor that lights up. We have a three-tiered stage with a DJ, you know, on one level, and sometimes an artist will come and sing a couple of songs on another level, and everyone dances all night. That's a very late night crowd, and everybody looks at it. It's all pipe and draped so that when you walk in, you feel like you're walking into a club, and you don't feel like you're walking into the dining room. It's completely, completely tricked out to look like, a disco from that era. That's a lot of fun. And that's the most broad audience that we have. It's, you know, it's couples, it's gay, it's straight, it's Latin, it's just all over the map. It's wonderful. People kind of come together and they just dance. Okay. And it's a great experience. And then we did Sandy Beaches, which is a cruise that we acquired from blues rock artist Delbert McClinton, who still performs. He had done it for many years and was nearing kind of the end of his wanting to do it all on himself. He was amazing that they were able to manage a cruise themselves. But and he just invited artists that were blues artists, Americana, kind of, there was a Texas country feel to it. There was a blues feel to it. It was really a bit of an eclectic mixture of music, but wonderful, fantastic musicians. And we loved the music. And so for a couple of years, we got to know them. And as he was closing in on, you know, retiring, we said, we'd love to take this. We'd love you to come in any capacity you want for as long as you want. And we'll work together. So our first year together was actually, you know, we had to postpone because of the pandemic. But when we finally got out, it was, again, a wonderful community, great music people. And that was interesting because that was a community that was already there. And then we came in as a new kind of new owners. And so we kind of had to tread lightly to make sure that people didn't feel like, hey, we're going to change something they loved. But at the same time, you want to offer them some things maybe they haven't seen before or gotten before. And so I think we did a pretty good job. We're going into our second year with that. They themselves had done it probably for 25 years before. And the last one wanted to do a jazz fest at sea. So we thought, boy, if we could deliver that experience on the ship with, you know, less than 2,000 people, it could be something really special. So it took us about 15 months to kind of put it together. We really embraced that community. We ended up hiring a chef from New Orleans, Kevin Belton, who was a wonderful guy. I mean, he curated some of the food on board. So every meal had a few New Orleans staples. We had an artist called Frenchie. Frenchie drew the performances as they were happening so people could see him drawing the performances, and we ended up auctioning some off and for charity and people who want to buy it. But we got the flavor of it. The music was fantastic. And we actually cruised to New Orleans. We thought, wow, our first year would be great to go from Florida to New Orleans, spend 24 hours there, and then go to Cozumel and then come back. So we ended up going up the Mississippi. And a lot of the New Orleans artists said they had never done that before. They lived whole lives and never gone up the Mississippi to see it unfold. And there's like 5 or 6 hours from the ocean to New Orleans. Now they don't go that fast, so, but that was really special. You saw the land unfold on each side.
Some of the performers for this inaugural New Orleans cruise?
Great question. We had Tab Benoit, we had Little Feet, we had Samantha Fish, we had Leah Nocentelli, we had Irma Thomas, the queen of New Orleans soul. We had John Boutte, and we had John Cleary, and so we had just tons and tons of artists. But it's just a wonderful experience. And one of the interesting things we did is we got in Monday night into New Orleans, and we took the entire ship to the famous club Tipitina's, and Galactic did two private shows for us at Tipitina's, which they have an ownership stake, and I think they own it. And we did an early show. So we took half the ship there for the first show and took those people back to the ship. And then we took the other half of the people, or they could go out and have dinner or whatever, took the second half to the private show in Tipitina's, which was spectacular. And then at midnight that night, we had Tedeschi Trucks come on and do the performance in the main theater. And that's a huge act, one of the biggest acts we've ever had. And they were fantastic. They did an hour, 45 minutes. So, yeah, and the next day you had some time in New Orleans, kind of to be sightsee and have a meal. But, I think people really got a sense of New Orleans. So that was fun. And the community there is really great. The community is really, they're all in. I mean, they really, the food, the culture, the artists, and, it was pretty special right from the get-go. So we were really pleased our first year, which is, you know, sometimes a struggle.
So you're gonna repeat that one in are all of the cruises going to run again in 24?
They're all going to run again in 24, except for Disco. We moved to February 25.
Okay.
So we took a year off and kind of and what we're doing with Disco is we're really kind of broadening the music. So it's dance, it's funk. It's going to be a little bit wider because Disco is a specific time period, and you don't want to put yourself completely in the box.
So listeners, as implied in the introduction, When the cruise lines catch a cold, charter companies and theme music producers get pneumonia as they are so inextricably linked to and dependent on the cruise lines. So my talk about spring 2020, when the pandemic hit, were any Star Vista Live cruises on the ocean?
Yeah, thankfully we were not on the ocean. We've always had an interesting thing where we do heavy January, we do a little bit of February, and then we do a couple of things in March.
Say something about what it was like for you and Star Vista Live during the lockdown. You know, how did you cater to your two constituencies, the cruisers and the performers?
But the first thing we had to do is we had to get clarity from the charter companies. And, you know, once we knew we were not going to sail and we were going to put it off, then we communicated back to the guests, the artisans.
When you say the charter companies, you mean like the cruise lines?
Holland America, yes.
Okay.
So it's Holland America and Celebrity. So I particularly had a guy at Holland America. Their salesperson was fantastic. He and I literally talked two or three times every week, just kind of encouraging each other. They were very supportive, and we did Friday night DJ parties. We did living room concerts where the artists would sit in their living room and play guitar and sing. We actually did a live performance from the Grand Ole Opry at one point. It was no audience. There was social distancing on stage. And this was, you know, down the road. It wasn't immediate. But we had all kinds of footage from prior years that we put out. So we did virtual listening parties. We had, at one point, we had two artists in two different places doing duets, singing together and performing for us. You know, we had all kinds of messaging. And then we reached out to the artists and we said, you know, we know you guys are struggling because we didn't have to explain to them what happened because every single gig they had got canceled overnight. So we were just many. But we also said to them, listen, if you have something you want to share with people, people are buying music digitally. And so a lot of the artists had albums that had reverted back in the rights to them. They had live recordings that they never put out. They were working on things. So we did deals with dozens and dozens of artists from the cruise and really some that weren't on the cruises, essentially putting the music into the market. And we had our publicists kind of helping them do interviews. We were creating YouTube channels for the artists so they could talk to their own guests. We did social media for them. And we ended up accelerating that part of our business, sharing artist music with people. And many of them gave us multiple albums, you know, 6, 8, 10 albums. We did interviews. Some of them did special things. And yeah, so we did all kinds of stuff. And that was great. So we kept the community together. You know, what was really troubling, of course, is you didn't know when it was going to end. You know, and vaguely in my mind, they said there's going to be a vaccination at some point. So I guess that will bring somewhat of an end to it. But then there were spikes. I mean, we first sailed the first time in fall of 21. Not a problem. Not one case. It was just smooth sailing. And then by January of 22, there was the Omicron spike. So we took the two January cruises that we had and moved them to March. So that was really, you know, dancing on the edge. It's, you know, it's to go a whole nother year. Yeah. And then the Omicron came down really quickly. So we ended up, you know, sailing without incident in March, whereas in January, I think it would have been hard, difficult. And then the artists themselves were testing. A lot of them were testing asymptomatically positive, you know, and they would call us and say, yeah, I'm positive. You know, I feel great, but I'm not coming on. I can't come on the ship. And of course, they couldn't. So we were losing artists in January, you know, December. And then getting tests were hard, too, because you know, people didn't have symptoms. The doctor didn't really want to test you. He said, you know, I need sick people that I'll deal with. So that dissipated as well. So, yeah, it was quite an adventure.
Talk about that triumphant return to the ocean in late 21. What cruise was it? Who were the headliners? And what was it like getting back on the ocean? Now, you know, how did the passengers respond?
It was really interesting. It was extremely emotional. When we told people we were going, and even internally, you know, we had a lot of discussions about when we could go back, was it safe? And I spent a lot of time on the phone with, you know, lawyers and consultants. And we kind of came to the point where if you have 100% vaccination and you're double testing everybody, it's probably safer than any place else you could possibly be. And so we made the commitment to sail, but we did allow in any of the guests that weren't comfortable. And the guests came back, and I've told this story before. It was unbelievably emotional. When I got on board, you know, we know the guests, we see, say hi to them. You know, we have some that are friends, but they were randomly hugging us, thanking us for bringing this thing back. A lot of them said the same thing. You know, we're not young people. We don't know how much time we have left. We're pretty blunt about it. But we really need this. We need to see our friends. We've been locked away. Thank you. Yeah, we had Gladys Knight on that one. That was Small Chop Memories. And that was Gladys. I think Chubby Checker was on that one. You know, it was just a great Righteous Brothers and a number of other artists. But it was pretty much people really ready to have a good time. They were really committed to having a good time, and they were really looking forward to it. You know, they had been through some tough times, and it was not a young population. So in an odd way, though, people a little bit older kind of put everything in perspective. They said, you know, this is something I really want to do. The people on board really wanted to be there.
So let's talk a little bit about the future. Anything new planned for Starvest Alive that you can divulge at this point, or not yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, everything we have, the way we've always done this is that when we feel like every single cruise that we have is really solid, the community's together, the music's great, the event is great, we move to something, the next thing. And you know, we just launched Big Easy, so that's the biggest, you know, biggest goal that we have is to make that an annual successful event, and widen Disco a little bit. So once we feel like, you know, we're around the corner on those two cruises successfully, we'll start looking at some other things. And one of the things we've always really wanted to do was start cruising in Europe. We'd love to go out in Europe. It opens the rest of the year up because, you know, in the U.S., it's the ships that we really want are either not available, you know, after April. They either go to Alaska or they go to Europe, or you have a lot of families cruising, and so it's a little more difficult to get the ship. A lot of the artists are on buses, and, you know, they're touring actively. So we end in March, and we begin again October, November. Now, if you went in Europe, there are lots of artists that could come and tack it into other things that they might do in Europe. So there could be U.S. artists that go there and then do a few other things. So there are European artists that we don't get to come on our ship. And there's European guests that, you know, it's just too expensive. So we're looking at the Mediterranean. I think, you know, that would be something that's very interesting.
Do you get many European passengers now?
We get a fairly small number. It really depends on the artist. It depends on the, you know, the genre, you know, and sometimes an artist has a significant following someplace. One time we had a bunch of guests from Brazil. Apparently America, the band America, had a really great penetration to that market, and they had like 20 people that came. Wow. So, you know, we've had a lot of people from Bermuda. Actually, you have a couple of travel agents that will also bring people. Soul Train has a tremendous group from Bermuda and some of the islands that come here, but there's a great travel agent that is kind of the Pied Piper. But, you know, Europe, they'll come in and for some of the rock bands and some of the R&B, but, you know, it's inexpensive. It's only 7 days. So, you know, I think I'd love to do a cruise there, which would open our product up, and then we could get Europeans to cruise in Europe, then we get Europeans to come, you know, in January and do a couple of our cruises, or February, whatever.
Are all of your cruises full for 24? Any availability?
No, we're completely sold out for the 24 spring. We have the Malt Shop, which is just launched for fall of 24, and that's like 75%, but that's only a month. So that will sell out in the next 60, 90 days. So yeah, everything else in 24 is sold out, and we're starting to launch 25 now.
Okay.
And so they will, of course, you know, be launched. We roll them out over the next couple of months.
Just let our listeners know how they can get signed up for the cruises, or I assume for the 24 cruises, you do have a waiting list.
You can go online to the cruise. So it's maltchopcruise.com. It's countrymusic.com. It's soultraincruise.com. Each one of those has its own website. We also have a B2B website. So if you want to get a link to all of them, starvistalive.com. And that will take you, that will give you a list of the, cruises that we have. And then each will take you to the specific website. You can register for the wait list on those sites and every Tuesday. Because what does happen is people cancel. It's a problem, difficulty, challenge, sometimes a good thing, sometimes the birth of a grandchild or whatever, and they reschedule and they want to, So we do release cabins usually Tuesday night, I think, each Tuesday night. And then people log online and grab a cabin. You yourself are welcome always to come. I'm sure I can find a cabin for you anytime. So if you pick a cruise that you find interesting, I'd love to have you out and see how we do it. It's fun. It's interesting. But obviously, you've cruised many times before. So
Soul Train.
Okay. Won't be a problem.
It
happens.
Let's talk about travel. I recall when I was writing Jura Cruising Again, I recall you telling me that Star Vista Alive encourages the staff working on the cruise to bring a plus one, right?
Yes, absolutely. Plus one and actually family. Happened was we had a lot of young staff. And I have two daughters who are, relatively young. And I thought, their parents and, siblings, they see they're going on a cruise. They're maybe 22, 23. What's it like? What's their work? So I told people, listen, invite your parents to come. Invite, certainly your spouse, recognizing that you're working. But if they are self-sufficient or can hang out with some of the other spouses, it'd be wonderful for them to see what it is you do. So that's kind of an open thing. And a lot of times it was great because the parents would come on and, see, hey, my daughter's on the ship for 7 days. What a wonderful experience with your, a professional, experience. It's something that I really support and they have fun now. A lot of them have turned into guests. A lot of, my head of marketing, her parents are big New Orleans jazz fans. And so they were just on the jazz. They've come for a bunch of years. So yeah, we do that. And we always tell people, listen, let people see what you do. I myself, oddly enough, had never had my children on the cruise until this year. My one daughter and her husband came, and my niece and her husband came on Sandy Beaches. And then my other daughter came with her boyfriend on Big Easy. So they kind of see with all these years, 55, 60 times I've done it and never saw it. So
see what dad is the president of. Now I know your wife, Marion, accompanies you sometimes. Do you get to spend much time together on the cruise, or is it nonstop for you?
No, after like 55, 60 times, we have pretty much over the drill. It's only when you have something odd or weather affects something. But we've solved so many problems that I think it's a lot less stressful than it used to be. There's still a bunch of meetings I go to and artists that I want to interact with. But, she and I usually do early meetings with the ship and my staff. And then we'll grab breakfast and then she'll go to the gym and I'll do some work and then we'll meet maybe for lunch and then usually have a dinner as well. A lot of times we'll try and have dinner with, some of the artists, some of my staff putting together. So yeah, she goes in, the other executive producer, Alan, his wife and my wife have been great friends. And so when they are out together on the cruise, they have a great time. But yeah, absolutely. We spend some time together.
I recall from the book, you and Marianne had an ambitious bucket list. I guess we last spoke about a year ago. Have you checked anything off, or you have anything? Can you see yourself checking anything off soon?
Well, I tell you, last year we had a fantastic vacation. We did a Mediterranean cruise, and one of the things we wanted to do is go to Greece and, you know, some Croatia and Montenegro. And so what we did, and we got invited to a wedding, oddly enough, in Ravello, Italy. So we thought, well, we're going to be there anyway. Let's go on a cruise, and then we'll go down to the wedding, and then we'll come back. And so we had a fantastic time. I hadn't cruised really in years where I wasn't doing anything. And that itinerary is pretty spectacular. It's Athens, a couple of Greek islands, there's Montenegro, Croatia, which is wonderful. The food, it was just a place I'd never been before. Neither of us had been there before. I've been to Italy before, but even the section we went to was interesting. So, you know, we're starting traveling again, you know. I mean, we lost those couple of years. And I think I, like everyone else, said, wow, if I don't do it now, you know, I may never do it. So let me, you know, enjoy it. So I'd like to go back this year, maybe do Scandinavia. I've been to lots of places in Europe, but there's a few areas. So I'd, you know, like to do that. And but other than that, you know, it's, then we have the new grandchild, and so that's kind of nice just to be home. And that'll be fun. But yeah, we're traveling a bit more certainly than we had in the past. It was the celebrity, I think, of the Millennium class, kind of the one we use initially. Okay. The one we use for the sister ship of one of the ones we use. And yeah, it was great.
I did my first mid cruise in October, and it was on Celebrity Beyond.
Is that the one with the floating the flying carpet?
So that was their newest at the time, and it was wonderful. And they just introduced a newer one in that class called the Celebrity Ascent. So I'm booked on the Ascent. I think it's in late 24 to do the islands that you did. So I want to do the Greek islands. I did a different part of the Mediterranean when I went in October. So
yeah, I love that new ship. We did, I think maybe Apex was the first one.
Apex was the first in that class. Edge was the first in that class.
Edge was the Edge. You're absolutely right. Yeah. It was the Edge. And we went on the Edge for a couple of days when they launched it. And it was pretty spectacular. It was very, very different. I love the kind of the outward looking, you know, it kind of had an outward perspective. It's a little bit bigger than we use, but boy, it was a pretty ship, and we did a couple of days. So Celebrity's got some pretty ships, and they're not huge. They're small enough that you keep the intimacy, but still amazingly elegant. So really great.
Just an aside, I think about 2 weeks before your episode airs, your episode will air the end of February, I will have on the podcast Lisa Lutoff-Perla, who was, as you know well, was the president, or not president, CEO of Celebrity. Yeah. When that class, Edge and Apex and Beyond were introduced. So that should be fun.
You know, I give her a lot of credit and you know, the team that put the Edge together, because it really was kind of a game changer. I know a lot of friends who never cruise ask me about that ship.
Yep.
Somehow it broke through the consciousness, the design, you know, the feel of it. Everyone was kind of, you know, intrigued with it. So I think it was pretty interesting, you know.
Mike, before we let you go, we normally ask guests a couple of fun cruise questions. In your case, we want to ask these fun cruise questions a little different, rapid fire style, as they relate specifically to Star Vista Live. And then I'll ask you maybe an oddball question that doesn't particularly relate to cruising. So the first fun question, funniest performer and why?
The funniest performer, probably Johnny Lee, the famous country artist, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. Johnny was he could have been a comedian, stand-up comedian, and was a raconteur and a joke teller. And our country cruiser, that's a conservative group in terms of, you don't use blue humor. You know, some of our other cruises are they're fine with it, but you don't do it there. He was the only artist that could ever get on stage and tell a blue joke. And unfortunately, I made the mistake of telling him a joke at dinner that he actually told on stage and then attributed it to Mike. Now, there's a couple of Mikes, so the other Mikes were really annoyed at me because they thought, well, maybe they get blamed for that that joke. But he actually made it more, far funnier. But he was a natural comedian. Just you can't make it up, and a character. And so and he had that kind of a lovable look that everybody wanted to take a picture with him. But he had a little bit of a devil's twinkle in his eye, and he was good with a blue joke. And he was the only one to get away with it. So I think he might have been our funniest, our funniest artist.
Most moving instance involving a performer on a Star Vista Live cruise.
Yeah, you know, there's so many memories. We did have one time where there were two women that came up to me and said, we really love Charlie Pride. And we were on this, and we lost our husbands earlier this year, and neither of us were going to go, but we found each other. And now we're together on the cruise, and all we want to do is meet Charlie Pride. And, you know, they didn't really ask me to do anything. They just kind of told me the story. So I went to Charlie and I said, listen, we're going to dinner tomorrow night. Would you mind coming over and taking a pic? And he couldn't have been more gracious. He came over, he took pictures, he asked them who they were. I mean, he really kind of got the idea that they were struggling with getting past something in their lives. And so it was just a warm and gracious moment. And he and his wife were the only artists that ever dressed up for like Halloween night, or dress up night. It was Winnie the Pooh and Tigger. And he had the tiger thing on, and it was just, they dressed and went out with the audience, but it was great. But he was really so sweet with those women. I really, you know, but we've had other situations where people had a 95th birthday and the artist has come off stage and danced with them. And, you know, the ship brought a cake out, and we've actually had, we've had proposals, number of proposals on board. We've had, we've done, actually one of our staff had her kind of bridal shower on the ship. So the ship kind of catered it for us, invited her family on while we're in port. So there's so many great moments that someday after I can write them all down, I guess, so I don't forget them, because it's pretty special.
That's the most embarrassing performer, guest, or Mike Jason story that you can repeat.
Well, I'm not going to pick on any artists or guests because we've had plenty of both. some of the guests were, had incidents, shall we say. But I myself, somebody convinced me, we do gong show, where you get up and you do a performance. And one of the production guys challenged me to get up and do a gong show in front of the main theater audience, and you have a celebrity panel that will either gong you or not. And so I decided to do my interpretation of Bob Dylan, Subterranean Homesick Blues, where you had, I think, somebody holding the cards up, and he was the rap, kind of almost like a rap, and there was Allen Ginsberg on the side. And so I had an Allen Ginsberg lookalike, and I had the harmonica, and I was doing it, and it was pretty bad. I'd say it's pretty bad. It was horribly bad. But the idea was to poke a little fun at myself. And so I think they probably would have let it go. But one of the panelists kind of was taking it seriously. And so he gonged me and he said, you know, I thought that Bob Dylan was never a very good singer. But after listening to you, I'm really thinking maybe he wasn't that bad. So, it was Peter Asher, actually, the famous producer, and Peter and Gordon, performer. So now I get a Bob Dylan gift every year from the staff. It's like a Bob Dylan book, a Bob Dylan. So, it was fun.
The single most memorable event in your years of doing the theme cruises.
I have to say that we had Smokey Robinson, and I know Smokey for a long time. We worked together over the years, and I got him to come on. He didn't want to sail. He didn't want to do two shows. So we took the terminal in Puerto Rico, and we created a performance area with bleachers and seats and concessions, and we had Smokey come on, and he did like 2 hours for us.
Get out.
It was unbelievable. And it was really incredible because the ship pulls right up and the terminal's right there. It's the international terminal, I think. And it's literally 10 feet across, and it's like it's covered. And it absolutely poured. And probably the only way you didn't get was to have this thing there at that time because it was a cover to get in. And people went in and had a great time. We had the entire 2,000 people on board. And Smokey just blew the place away. You know, there's so many great ones. I mean, you know, we've had Paul Anka, and we've had the Beach Boys, and we've had Farner. We had Leonard Skinner. We had Tedeschi Trucks was wonderful. I'm leaving a bunch of people out. But Smokey, you know, he's like a Hollywood star and a music star at the same time. It's just unbelievable. I mean, I've never seen it. Music artist that gets that reaction wherever he goes. And so that was pretty special.
But I hear that he has since come on the ship several times.
He has. That was like maybe that was the first time he came. And then he came on a couple of times where he actually sailed. It was great. And he came on once on Mull Chop, which was great. And he actually asked the audience to pick a song. He kind of passed the hat and pulled a song out of the hat, and he'd tell the story of the song, and then we'd play the song.
Wow.
And so actually that was kind of fun because you'd never see that, right? So yeah, he's been on maybe three times, at least three times, and he's been on both Mall Shop and Soul Train. But the first one was pretty special because it was everybody on the ship. It was like we turned this terminal into a performance area. So that was pretty special.
Finally, Mike, the oddball question. First of all, I'd like to welcome your fans, friends, and family who are listening. We certainly hope, listeners, you have liked what you have heard and will come back to check out future and past episodes. So, Mike, share one thing that my listeners and your fans and friends don't know about Mike.
Yeah, there's a couple of things, but one that's, I think, pretty interesting that almost nobody knows about. During my hotel days, I got a call from the CEO of the company, and he said, we have casinos in Africa. And they were within the hotel, so they were adjacent to the hotel, and they were, I guess, a way of making additional money. And some of them were losing money. So I want you to fly there undercover with two other people, and I want you to observe what's going on in these casinos and then report to them and report to me. Let me know how are we possibly losing money in the casino, which is almost impossible. So I and two other people went in undercover, and we gambled every night, and we played cards and craps and roulette and everything else. We kind of took down notes, and we made some observations, and we did it for like maybe almost 3 months. And even during it, I just said to the people, I said, no one's ever going to believe somebody paid us to do this. It was like so preposterous. So then we made our report, and we ended up, you know, they ended up making lots of changes, but it was kind of interesting to go undercover. Nobody knew who we were. We were just gaming, and they gave us, you know, local currency, and a lot of those currencies are blocked. They're probably not anymore. But they're pretty much blocked. You can't take the money out. So we would game, and after a while, we got pretty good, and we'd start winning. But of course, you can't take it with you. So we had these piles of cash on the bed at night, and we said, okay, we got to put it in a suitcase and give it back to the hotel once we tell them who we are, and we announced ourselves and gave them a report. And so undercover casino spy, I guess you'd call it. I don't whatever, but
well, that's kind of that's fun duty. I mean, you got paid. You were working.
You're working, yeah.
Mike, thank you so much for coming on the Joy of Cruising podcast, and all the best to you. I know Star Vista Live will continue to do great things in cruising, so we look forward to having you back if you will be back.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun. You brought back some memories for me that, you know, sometimes you hurdle through these experiences, and having somebody ask you about them brings back some memories.
The Jorb Cruising and Cruising Interrupted, each $16.99 plus shipping, and new release, The Jorb Cruising Again, for $18.99, can be ordered at the link on the JorbCruisingPodcast.com. For each of the three books, use the discount code JorbCruisingPodcast and get $4 off. The Jorb Cruising books are also available at Amazon. Order the ebook at Amazon or your favorite online retailer. Stay in touch by joining the Jorb Cruising Podcast Facebook group or following the Jorb Cruising Podcast on Instagram. We're constantly adding new shows. Please leave a review and tell a friend about us. We hope you enjoyed this brief escape to the ocean. See you next week.